Welcome to Spook Pod. This is Courtney.
And this is Emily.
Welcome, everyone, to Spook Pod. We have a case for you today, and she has a really hard name. Emily and I were just trying to say it.
Anne de Ruyter de Wilt. That's definitely not how you say it. That's me butchering it in very hard English.
Yeah. We butcher names on this show, but we're sorry. We try our best, and I know that we sound stupid sometimes, but that's just how it be. That's the way.
Just a little asterisk. That was not my best. That was me. That was me intentionally saying it in an English pronunciation. So Courtney's going to give you the real one. I swear we're not that horrible.
I'm going to give you my best. Emily just pretends to butcher it. But, well, I would say it like Anne de Ruyter de Wilt. But also she has two last names, so it's like kind of confusing.
Or just a last name as a middle name. I think that is also a viable option.
Her middle name is Duh. Imagine if your middle name was Duh. Just Duh.
Well, that's just of, right? That's of. Yeah. So it would be, for us, it would be like Emily of.
Emily of Brame.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, anyways, so this, I think, is a really interesting case. I had a lot of fun doing the research for this. And it's really similar, I think, to a couple of cases that we've done before. One being Mariana Vatstra, it reminded me of. Emily, did you know that Mariana Vatstra, that is our most listened to episode as a...
Oh, that's interesting.
Apart from Natalie Holloway. Those two are like really, yeah, a lot more than the others. It's all...
Everybody listen to the one about the ghost ship. Go do it. It's good.
It's also similar to a case that we did pretty recently, which was the one, well, there was two of them with Ronald Pieper. He was the one, he had murdered Crystal Ambrosius and Annika van der Stop. So it reminded me of that case. But it honestly, like when I was doing this research, I just felt like it was like so many cases that we have done, just like different elements of them like smushed together into this one case. I just heard the little lizard squeaking again. If you hear a little noise.
I actually heard it too this time.
If you hear a little squeaking noise, there is a lizard in my room and they make little chirping noises. I can't see it, but I can hear it. So that's what
to make it very clear, this is an unintentional, uninvited lizard, just so people don't think you're cooler than you are. She does not have a lizard.
I do not have a pet lizard. Lizards.
This is just a wild lizard that has come into her abode.
In Aruba, that happens. They're just little. They're really cute, but... Well, let's dive into this case. I had a really great source in this case. It was this long written document that went into a lot of detail, and it was by a psychologist. His name was... Let me just look it up really quickly because I forget. Harry Timmerman was this psychologist's name. And he was really heavily involved in the case. So it was really interesting for me to hear his research and his insights on this. So I linked his article in our notes like usual, and I use a lot of his info in this episode. His article, though, is in Dutch. If you go to read it, I translated it for the purposes of this episode. So without further ado... Having a hard time talking again today. This is the story of Anne de Ruyter de Wilt. On April 30th, 1997, 18-year-old Anna got up in her home city of Groningen. It was Queen's Day. Man, I freaking can't talk.
I believe in you.
It was Queen's Day. So I talked about this holiday before when we talked about the Mariana Vatstra case, because she was also murdered on Queen's Day, but in 1999, so 2 years later. Seems...
Man, not a good day to be, like, out and about in the...
Not a good day for murder in this country. everyone is drunk and partying and going crazy. And I guess that leads to some not so nice stuff. But even though everyone, yeah, was drinking, partying, going nuts with the king, they drink with the king, or I guess queen in this case. But that's not what Anna had in mind. She was actually going to go to Amsterdam with three friends. So she studied sociology, and she was very passionate about this. She was super big on like human rights and fighting for causes, and really just being like an all-around great human being who really wanted to make the world a better place. She was super smart, super independent, and a very dedicated volunteer. So she was going to Amsterdam to actually sell t-shirts, where all the money that was collected was going to be going to a good cause. So that's what she was doing. While everyone was partying, she had activism on her mind. But her day didn't really go according to plan. So her and one of her guy friends, they decided to hitchhike to Amsterdam to meet their other two friends there. But they had a pretty hard time doing it. I guess they thought it would be easier, but it ended up taking them like a lot of hours to get all the way from Groningen to Amsterdam. That's quite far. So they didn't arrive in Amsterdam until the late afternoon, a lot later than when they were supposed to get there. So their plans were a little bit foiled, and it meant that Anna, she never ended up meeting her other two friends. And at some point, the boy that she had hitchhiked to Amsterdam with also disappeared. So she was just left alone, basically, in Amsterdam.
Dropping friends left, right, and center, which is not a good game to play.
Yeah. But, well, this had nothing to do with her murder. So she originally planned to spend the night in Amsterdam. But because her day, you know, it didn't go as expected, she wasn't having fun. So she just decided, meh, I'm just going to take the train back home to Groningen. So she got on the train. She even ran into a couple of friends on the train on her way home. She spoke to them. She told her friends, you know, like the shitty day that she just had. And then when the train arrived in Groningen at Anna's stop, which was the main station, she got off the train. It's about 1:30 in the morning, but she's now back in her home city. And she's had a long day at this point, right? Like she just wants to get home. Two of her fellow classmates saw her walking across the bridge of the Groninger Museum and turning right in the direction of Heerenplein and Heerenstraat. But that would be the last time that Anna was ever seen alive. On the next day, Thursday, May 1st, it was a completely normal day at the train station. Like, trains pass constantly. It was about 4 trains per hour on this particular route, starting very early in the morning. But for some reason, it took until about noon that they noticed that there was a body laying beside the tracks, and the police were immediately called. The body was found, like, down a hill. Like, the train tracks were, like, in an embankment, and the body was in there. And it was assumed, based on the position, that the victim, like, had been rolled down the hill. She was naked, and her clothes had apparently been thrown down the hill after her. But nothing else was found. Like, no bag, no purse, no luggage, no identity cards, like, nothing. So at this point, it was an unknown female. One more day after that, on May 2nd, at the end of the afternoon, Anna's father, Jaap de Ruiter de Wildt, he was a lawyer in Groningen, and he went to the police station to report his daughter missing. So because Anna was supposed to like spend the night in Amsterdam, no one was really super concerned that she wasn't back home on May 1st. But by the time May 2nd hit, they were like, okay, something is wrong. She's supposed to be home by now. So this is what brought Anna's father to the police station, and he recognized a ring as belonging to her, after which it was confirmed that this body that was found was in fact the body of Anna de Ruiter de Wildt. There was one kind of weird thing about where Anna was found. So she was found like at the train station, well, kind of close to the train station near the tracks, but a completely different train station than the one that she got off the train at. So she was found, it was called Norder Station, where she was found. It was, yeah, completely different station and quite far from where she got off the train, and also not on the way, like not on her way home. And something else weird happened on May 2nd. A body of a second young female was found in some bushes, also near the train tracks, just about a kilometer away from where Anna was found. This woman turned out to be a 19-year-old prostitute named Shirley Hereichers. She had apparently been killed 5 days before, like even before Anna had been murdered. But it had taken them longer to find her body, so she was out in the elements for a lot longer. And in fact, Anna and Shirley would be just two of about seven girls murdered in Groningen this year. So something really weird was going on here. So in this particular episode, I'm going to be discussing Anna, and we will also talk about Shirley more as well. But the other victims of these like group of seven, I'm going to discuss them in a later episode. So they don't have to do with this case, actually. So for now, just keep Shirley in the back of your minds, and we'll come back to her later, and we'll focus mostly on Anna. So coming back to Anna, police believed her death was due to foul play, given like she had injuries on her neck, and also the fact that she was found naked suggested that she was the victim of a sexual offense. So they did an autopsy on Anna, but it came back. It showed that she had been killed by manual strangulation, so strangling with your hands. The forensic examination, however, did not yield any blood, semen, or other material that indicated that a sexual offense had taken place. So it doesn't look like that actually happened. There was DNA that was found and taken from under her fingertips, which showed a mixture of her DNA with an unknown male's DNA. And from here, police began their investigation to find who did this. They started canvassing the neighborhood, asking anyone in the vicinity if they saw anything unusual. They're asking the public for tips. Police, yeah, like they thought that it was really strange, like where she had been found, because it was just super far from where she was. So they didn't know how she got there or where she was intercepted. And it was also like she was walking through the city to walk home, but because it was Queen's Day, like people party nonstop on this day. So the city was still super lively at this point, even though she was walking home like well after midnight. So one witness came forward, though, that seemed kind of promising to police. This made me laugh. They called this woman Mrs. Owl. This was a fake name, like she remained anonymous, but the name that they used was Mrs. Owl.
You think they did that because she looked like an owl or because she was up really late at night?
Maybe. Maybe both. She didn't look like a prostitute, though. So this is what she said. At 2:30 in the morning, she was passing this Norder station on her bicycle. And at that moment, a man came down the stairs to the platform, looked at her intently, and shouted, "Look ahead, you dirty, dirty whore." I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know why that.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine just like in a city that's having like a celebration? It's early in the morning. You know, it's getting towards the point where people are, you know, ending things. You're walking home and some dude just rambles out of some train station and calls you a dirty whore. And you're like,
I know, right?
I live here.
I mean, the thing is like, it sucks, but this kind of thing happens. Like, there are guys that do catcalling and also guys that do weird shit like this, right? So, I don't know. But I loved this part of the report. Like, the police report, they were like, Mrs. Owl was not a prostitute, and she could not pass for one based on how she was dressed. They're just like, this is so weird. But, like, I mean, to me, like, there's a lot of guys out there that yell things at women. I have had many guys yell things at me. But catcalling, in fact, like, it's not super common in the Netherlands. It's compared to other countries that I've been to. I don't get it in the Netherlands, really. So I guess this seemed really weird to the police that a guy would just yell this? I mean, it is weird. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, it does happen.
But maybe for people who are listening to this in North America and they're like, every time I walk past a construction site, I get heckled.
Yeah.
Then maybe you should understand that this is a less common occurrence yeah. across the pond.
Yeah. And I mean, to be called like a dirty, dirty whore is a little, I mean, it's not nice, but there's.
Unless that's your thing. No kink shaming. This situation just doesn't feel like the right one.
But when this happened, like, this really scared Mrs. Owl. She felt really threatened and she rode away really fast on her bike.
Zoom, zoom.
Zoom, zoom. But she was able to give a really good description of the man that did it. So based on this, they made a composite drawing, and this composite drawing was given to the press. A lot of tips came into police after this composite sketch was released, but none of them seemed super great. Like, well, I guess one of them was okay, but they had some that were just like, my ex-partner treated me horribly, so I could consider this being him. And one woman was just like, I don't like my ex-husband, and sometimes he goes to Groningen. And it's like, that's not really, like,
these poor guys. I mean, like, I don't justify anything that went on in their relationship. I don't know what that life was like. But to just be, like, thrown under the bus, like, you know, I broke up with this dude, and he seems like a sketchbag. Meanwhile, the guy's just, like, at home reading a book or something, and now the police are looking for him.
And just to be, like, sometimes he goes to Groningen, like, it's not really.
On occasion, he's been to the city. That would be, like, me saying, like, you know, sometimes people go to Toronto, and I hate them.
Yeah. Yeah, so they got, like, a lot of tips like that. There was a clinic in Groningen that treats, like, quite mentally ill patients. So they also had a lot of tips coming in that were associated with that clinic. Also, like, not super nice and not super valid because it didn't have anything to do with that. But they did get one really good tip for somebody named Johnny M. He was from Lake, I say it like leek. It looks like it's leek, but it's pronounced lake.
We have a vegetable that looks like the name of a city. It's just pronounced differently. Bear with us.
And fun fact, that's the same place that Thomas R. was from in the case of Mika Ort. Lake is only 15 kilometers away from Groningen. So this Johnny M. character, he was really well known to police. And one of the tips that came in about him was from the mother of a good friend of his. And this woman said that he had visited on the night of Queen's Day. She couldn't exactly remember what time it was because she said she had a couple of glasses of wine. But she, like, remembered what TV show she was watching at the time. So they got the time based on that. But she said that Johnny M. had been very nervous and that he had made comments that led her to infer that he had killed someone. Johnny M. also apparently visited the sister of this woman, and she said that he came to visit her very early in the morning after Queen's Day and that he looked very dirty.
Okay, so what is this dude's vibe? Because, like, just pause for a minute. He murders a girl, and then he's like, I'm going to go visit my bud's mom. So he goes to her house and he's like, I may or may not have just pushed a bitch down a hill that was dead. Then he's like, you know what? I'm going to go to his auntie's house and I'm going to deal the same story with her.
And she's going to, like, notice that I'm dirty.
How close were you with this person that you're friends with both the mother and the aunt of this person?
Yeah, even the police were like, this seems kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, continue with what you were doing, but just so far, what's happening?
Yeah. So they also had a couple people that recognized, like, Johnny M. as the composite drawing. So they're getting, like, a lot of people kind of naming this Johnny M. guy. So they're kind of thinking, like, okay, maybe there's something to this. And they arrest him and interrogate him. At first, he was super nervous. And apparently when he was arrested, like, it wasn't made clear to him who he was suspected of murdering. So he had no idea, because at one point he muttered, if you have been with such a whore, it does not mean that you killed her. So I think that he was thinking he was arrested for the murder of the prostitute, Shirley, who I mentioned, like the other woman found. As soon as he understood that he was suspected in Anna's murder, he completely relaxed, became super cooperative. He gave his DNA and he answered all questions.
So he definitely killed Shirley.
Well, not saying anything yet. Actually, he didn't. He did not. But anyways, okay, so...
He just boinked her. It's fine.
He just boinked her, maybe, yeah. But then the suspicion on Johnny became even stronger because Mrs. Owl picked Johnny from a lineup of men. Like, they had, like, a lineup of six guys, and they were like, who called you a dirty whore? And she was like, that guy right there. And it was Johnny M. So at this point, the investigators are like, okay, like, we solved this. This must be Johnny M. But then the DNA came back, and it was not Johnny M who was under Anna's fingernails. So since there was no evidence, he had not confessed, they released him. But this guy, like, I feel bad for Johnny M because he was a suspect, like, for 3 years. It took 3 years to find Anna's actual killer. And in that time, like, the cloud loomed over his head the whole time. So I think it's, you know, it's pretty shitty for Johnny M. I don't think he was a good guy. Like, he could have been the
guy. I was
going to
say, like, also, though, don't be a sketchbag and, like, do things that, you know, make people to, like, lead people to believe that you could do the murder. Like, if there's that many people who are like, yo, Johnny's a, he could kill some people, that you've got a problem. Yeah. Change people's perspective of you.
True. I'm thinking, like, maybe Johnny was the guy who yelled at Mrs. Owl, but don't know. All right, so yeah, now we're at like 3 years later. So it's a cold case at this point. They don't know who killed Anna. And on Sunday, May 7th in the year 2000, guess who gets involved in this case? None other than our good pal, Peter R. De Vries.
Peter.
We love Peter. He was in close contact with Anna's father, who was stopping at nothing to try to solve his daughter's murder. And in this case, actually, the police completely cooperated with Peter, which is not something that usually happens. So they gave, like, all their files over to him. They're like, have at it. Look at everything. This is what we got. So when Peter aired his episode, he paid attention to a tip that came into the police from two witnesses. So when this tip came in, it wasn't looked at seriously because they thought that the tip from Mrs. Owl seemed way more important. But nothing had really come of the tip from Mrs. Owl, so Peter decided to focus on this other tip. To me, like, this seems kind of obvious to me. I think the police got a lot of slack for this later because, like, it's kind of crazy to me that the police just, like, went with this random guy who just yelled, like, you dirty whore, when this was a tip that happened. So let me tell you this tip. So this tip came in from an elderly couple who lived about 200 meters from Norder Station. They were awakened at 2:30 in the night by the screams of a woman. It was so disturbing to them that they got out of bed to see what was going on. And from their side window, they saw a man walking with a woman along the footpath, and the man had his arm around the woman's head and was pulling her, like, dragging her, and she was, like, screaming.
This could have just been a very unfortunately timed game of Noogie.
This kind of bugs me. So the older woman, she said that she was so worried that she suggested to her husband that they call the police. And the husband was like, nah, that's no use. Like, by the time the police get here, these people are going to be long gone. So they just went back to bed. They did nothing at this point.
Like, you could have called anyways and just been like, listen, I saw some weird shit. And then if they get there and it's nothing, then it's nothing. Or they can't find the person, then at least you've made the call.
Exactly.
Right?
That's what I think. Like, you should always make the call. It is way better to be safe than sorry.
Listen, I'm going to sound like a little police bitch right now, but if you see something, say something.
It's so true, because, like, maybe this would have changed everything, you know? So, yeah, they only called in this tip after they heard what happened at Norder Station. And they were like, oh, maybe we should tell the police about the fact that we saw a guy dragging a screaming woman by her head. So it was Pater's episode that really got the ball moving on this case again. And basically right after his episode aired, the Netherlands Forensic Institute said that they ran the DNA from Anna's fingernails in the database and they got a hit. They had said that they would run the DNA regularly in the system, but apparently the last time that they had done it was a year and a half earlier. So it was kind of Pater's episode that probably reminded them to be like oh, hey.
Oh, we, remember that file that we should
we should maybe run
hit that button. Yeah.
Yeah. So I give credit to Pater in this case for solving it. He really got the ball moving, and I think he gets to check this one on his belt too. So the DNA belonged to Hank S., who was also known to police. He would have been around 29 at the time of Anna's murder, and he was an addict since the age of 12 who used everything that he could get his hands on, and he got money that he needed for the drugs through burglaries, robberies, you know, all that sorts of fun stuff. He had spent literally like about half his life in prison, and until his DNA matched, he had never been considered a suspect in this case at all. He was not on police radar at all. And Anna and Frank didn't know each other, so therefore there was no reason for his DNA to be under Anna's fingernails unless, you know, he was attacking her and she was fighting him off. And this is a really shitty part. Hank had actually been released from prison for another crime on April 25th, just 5 days before the murder of Anna. And he had even been given a one-way ticket to Groningen, all the way from his prison, which was in Maastricht. So literally, like, officials or whoever give him a ticket to go across the entire country. When he gets out of jail, he goes to Groningen and he commits murder.
I would sue the state if I was her parents.
Yeah, and it gets even worse because after he murdered Anna, he would go on to commit multiple armed robberies. Not one, but multiple. And on May 3rd, he got arrested again. So dude was literally out of jail for 8 days. 8 days. And in that 8 days, he did a shitload of terrible fucking things. Like, he was drunk, he was on drugs the whole time, he was burglarizing the shit out of everything. And Anna lost her life. Like, it's really fucking annoying. And when he was arrested, like, this 8 days later, he resisted so fiercely that 6 police officers were needed to restrain him. But this wasn't new. Like, the earlier time he was arrested before that, they needed 10 officers to restrain him. And he could not even be interrogated or anything because he was so aggressive. Like, he was like a wild animal.
This is one of those people that I don't think should benefit from the prison system in the Netherlands. Just lock him up, toss the key, and call it a day.
Yeah. You're going to be a little bit mad about that also.
I'm
going to
be salty. Yeah, I know. I'm ready.
There's a couple things that'll make you mad, but at least one thing that will make you happy, I think. So... okay, so remember, like, it took the police about 3 years to find out that Hank was involved in the murder of Anna. So even though he got arrested right away after, it was just for burglary, right? So in those 3 years before he was caught for the murder of Anna, he was up to some shit. Was up to some shit there. So before we dive into Anna a bit more, let's look at what he did for these next 3 years. Okay, so May 3rd, 1997, that's when he gets arrested for the burglary, right after murdering Anna. And then on August 1st, 1997, you're gonna like this part, he got stabbed in a prison brawl by a fellow inmate, and this actually caused him to be paralyzed. It injured his spinal cord, and he had to use a wheelchair. Not, I guess not really something to be happy about, but in this guy's case, he's a fuckwad, so...
I'm smiling. I don't...
But unfortunately, if you think the fact that he was paralyzed stopped him from being an absolute asshat, you would be wrong. So Hank was released again from prison on May 1st, 1998, basically one
Stop
year.
Stop letting him back out. Stop it. Listen to me. Stop letting him back out.
Stop. So shortly after he got released in 1998, Hank asked a 72-year-old woman to take him to a bicycle repair shop because both tires on his wheelchair were flat. And this lady was super kind. She loaded him up and his wheelchair up into her car. And on the drive over there, he threatened her with a knife, made her drive to the border of Germany, and raped her. I honestly don't know how he managed to do that. He was literally paralyzed and in a wheelchair, but he did.
Can I also just say that I make fun of my grandmother because she's irrationally paranoid about that, like to the point where she fell and broke her pelvis and didn't want paramedics to come in her house in case they memorized her floor layout and came back later for her. And I was like, you're in your 70s. Nobody wants to argue. But Hank just proved me wrong. So cool.
Yeah, I have no idea how he did that. Like, fuck Hank. Like, fuck right off. So he was arrested for this rape, and he was sentenced to 8 years in prison for that. There is at least a silver lining. So Hank was, like, adamant. He's like, I did not rape this 72-year-old woman. And he was trying so hard to prove that.
Was she pregnant?
No. But he insisted that his DNA be taken so that he could prove his innocence in this rape. And it was when his DNA was taken and put into the system.
That he was caught for the other one?
Yeah.
What a dumbass.
I know, right? So yeah, his DNA goes into the system.
You know, for someone who spent most of their life in prison, you certainly don't know how the justice system in your country works.
He's very
you
dumb.
Dingleberry.
He's very dumb. Very dumb. I love a good dumb perpetrator because it's good when they're dumb, they get caught, but he's so dumb. Yeah, so by the time Hank came onto police radar for being involved in the murder of Anna, he was already in police custody for the rape of this 72-year-old woman. And that, unfortunately, is when some more shit came out. So, Hank gets arrested, for murder. And this was very interesting to the police in Utrecht, another city in the Netherlands. So Annette van Rijn had been raped and murdered in Utrecht on August 13th, 1994, and Hank was the last person seen in her company. So now we have another potential victim. I really tried hard to find a lot of information on Annette because I wanted to do like a whole other entire episode just on her, just kind of like what we did with Ronald Pieper, but there is just so little information on Annette. It kind of makes me sad. But what I do know is that Annette was a 24-year-old woman. She was undergoing treatment in a psychiatric institution in Zeist for a personality disorder.
What is wrong with this guy?
Yeah. And Zeist is actually where I work, by the way. That's where my office is. It's in Zeist. It's a small town, like right beside Utrecht, and it's super cute there. But on the weekend, Annette could leave this facility in Zeist, and she was last seen in a bar in Utrecht with Hank. The Netherlands Forensic Institute re-examined the DNA found both at the crime scene and on Annette's body. And who do you think it matched?
Stanky Hanky.
Yes, it matched Stanky Hanky. And another thing came out too. So a prostitute came forward and said that she had been raped by Hank in the past. She met Hank in Westerhaven, which I think is like the street walking area in Groningen. And Hank had told her that he just got out of prison, that he had drugs and a place to sleep, and did she want to go with him? And she agreed. But as they were walking and came to the railroad tracks, Hank put his arm around her head, dragged her away, broke into a summer house, and raped her there for hours. If you remember, those two witnesses, like they also said that they saw a man with an arm wrapped around a woman's
head.
Yeah,
what, is that like his move or something?
I guess so.
Is that how we got the 72-year-old woman too?
That's his modus operandi. I don't know that word.
M.O.
His M.O. Yeah, short form. So, yeah, it turns out, like, Hank had done some shit. So they're preparing to interrogate him, like, for murder at this point. And I thought that this was really interesting. So this is where, like, the guy who wrote that really great article comes in, because he was basically in charge of the plan for this interrogation. He was a psychologist, if I didn't say that already. And they really needed, like, a solid plan to interrogate Hank, because he was a fucking lunatic. He was super disturbed. He would not cooperate. He was, like, extremely violent, and he would just, like, attack the police interrogation rooms for no reason. Like, would just lose his shit and, like, assault people. He also, like, he basically refused to talk to the police completely, and he preferred to talk to the judges. But the problem was, like, unless Hank confessed, the prosecutor was not going to bring charges of murder against him, and he would never see a judge. Like, there just at this point wasn't enough against him, so the police really needed to get him to confess and to get more evidence or information from him. So this interrogation became very important. And the psychologist really looked into Hank's background and found out a lot about him. So his parents were married super young, and they were married because Hank was coming. And then they had two more children after that. And then the father ended up leaving his mother, like, alone with the three children. But then his father had an accident at work, became incapacitated, and returned home. And from there, the father was, like, drinking a lot and abusing mostly the mother and Hank. They were the main victims. Hank was no longer welcome at his house by the age of 14. And from there, he really dove deep into drugs and alcohol. Hank took solace in only a couple of people throughout his life. So one of them was his mother. The other was a neighbor who took him in after his father had kicked him out. And the third was a female social worker. So all of these were women. And for some reason, Hank seemed to have a connection only with women, which is a little weird in this case, because normally people who commit, like, rape and murder against females, they tend to hate women, you know? But this wasn't the case with Hank. So they had him be interrogated by only female police officers. And they were given other guidelines, you know, like how to talk, how to act around him, how to do certain things. But this kind of,
don't let,
like,
him get his arm around your head, because yeah, that's how he does it.
It kind of worried me that it was just female police officers. I don't know. I would have been so scared interrogating him because he was a lunatic. But it actually worked, and he confessed. So police were questioning him about both the murders of Anna and Annette. And at one point, Hank said, "Sit down for a moment, because there are not two, there's four."
Oh, good. Good job, Hank.
So he then made a statement about Anna, but this statement made absolutely no sense. Like, it was not consistent with who Anna was or the facts of the case or anything. But it was a really lifelike story that police were like, okay, is this real? Like, is he thinking that this is Anna, but it's actually another person? So this was the story. He said that he was in a car with someone that night, and then they saw a prostitute on the street who they knew had debts with an acquaintance. They dragged her into the car and took her out of town. During the ride, Hank had beaten her, and she ended up dying. And then they drove back to town and threw her body near the railroad tracks. So obviously this doesn't match Anna, right? But he's saying this confession as if this is Anna. He then made a second confession about Annette, which this one turned out to be pretty accurate based on the facts of the case. And he said he murdered her after they argued over drugs. Everything kind of lined up in that case. His DNA was on her, he confessed, so that one was quite solid. And then, randomly, Hank also confessed to the murder of a drug trafficker in Groningen. It was a case that had already been officially solved, and Hank was not thought to be involved.
So now he's just tacking on crimes to himself that, like, he didn't even need to... Nope, it's fine. Go ahead, Hank. Go ahead.
And then finally, the fourth one, Hank confessed to the murder of a prostitute in the red light district of Groningen. Okay, so I'm going to break all these down because, yeah, that was a lot and it's a little confusing. So working backwards, so his confession about killing this prostitute in the red light district, it was found that a prostitute had been attacked and robbed exactly where Hank said it happened and exactly how he said it happened. But the prostitute actually did not die. She was only unconscious. And she woke up a few hours later and reported what happened to her to police. So Hank had thought that he killed this woman, but she actually survived. I mean, he still attacked and beat her, though. But unfortunately, no charges were ever brought to him because they couldn't find this woman anymore again after this. So nothing kind of happened with that one. When it came to the drug trafficker, yeah, Hank had nothing to do with this murder. He was actually in prison at the time that it happened, and the case was already solved officially and done. And Hank later said that other people told him that he was the one that committed it, so he just assumed that he had.
Not a That's smart like someone guy. Walking up to me and going, you had a dog last year that was black, and me going, no, I didn't. And I'm going, yeah, you had a dog last year that was black. And then me going around starting to tell people that I had a dog last year that was black when I never did, Hank.
Yeah. That's what happens when you have, like, when you're always on drugs. You don't remember shit. So, yeah, he had no idea that, but he was innocent of that one. Okay, so when it comes to the weird story that seemed like it really happened, but Hank thought that it was Anna, the police thought, could this be Shirley, I don't know how to say her last name, Shirley Herrigers, the one who I told you about at the beginning of this episode. And it turns out that yes, it really could have been Shirley that he was referring to. So remember, Shirley was found a day after Anna was found, but she had been dead for 5 days at that point before she was found. So this did fall in the 8-day range that Hank was out of prison and in Groningen. So that's another annoying thing. So apparently in that 8 days, he killed more than one person. Like, crazy. So on Shirley, they found a mixed DNA profile. It was Shirley's DNA and the DNA of two males. And this made sense because in Hank's story, he mentioned that he was with an accomplice.
Yeah, just joyriding with a buddy and we picked up a chick and killed her and then threw her down the side of an embankment. Is that not how everybody's Friday night goes?
Yeah, good fun. So the DNA was examined on Shirley and it was found that with a chance of 1 in 1,000, one of the profiles did in fact belong to Hank. And if the perpetrator was someone other than Hank, it needed to be somebody in his male line, like a family member, like a dad, an uncle, like somebody on his male line. So Hank was charged with Shirley's murder as well. So now we're at three, right? Shirley, Annette, and Anna. But unfortunately, when it comes to Shirley, he was acquitted in court for that one. So Shirley has never received any justice.
That's crap.
Yeah.
And again, Netherlands, we're gonna have it out over your law system.
And the thing is too, like, I didn't hear anything else about this supposed accomplice involved with Shirley's murder, but now, like, now Hank is adamantly denying being involved in that one. So
except they have his DNA.
Yeah, like 1 in 1,000 chance, and if it's not him, it was someone in his family. Like, it's pretty clear, I think. Yeah, but man, like, there's so many weird puzzle pieces around this case, aren't there? So back to Anna. Over the course of a lot more interrogations, Hank did eventually say, step by step, what happened to Anna. And there was a couple important things that came out of this. One was that Hank said he threw Anna's backpack into a pond. And many people were like, yeah, we're not gonna find the backpack in the pond. But divers went in, and literally within 5 minutes, they had found Anna's backpack and retrieved it. So that means Hank was telling the truth, and that kind of makes it seem a lot more likely, right, that he knew where the backpack was. He probably murdered her. Hank also said that he did pass by that street with Anna where the two witnesses had seen him. So maybe if that fucking couple had called the police, we wouldn't be talking about this right now.
Be better.
Be better. Hank also said that he was not where Mrs. Owl said she was yelled at and called dirty whore. So whoever called Mrs. Owl a dirty whore remains a mystery. I think it was Johnny M.
I like how Mrs. Owl hijacked a murder investigation because she wanted to find out who called her a whore.
So Hank went to court for the murder of Anna and Annette and was found guilty. But he got a super shitty sentence. However, it was literally almost the maximum sentence that he was legally allowed to get. But because of all the other crimes he committed and all the sentences that he already had, he could not receive more than 9 years for both the murder of Anna and Annette combined. And he received 8 years for it. So almost the maximum. Along with the compulsory psychiatric treatment. So that was back in 2001 that he was sentenced. So at this point in time, now that we're over in 2023, Hank is actually out of prison, but he is not released. He is doing his mandatory psychiatric treatment. And I have an update on how that is going because the answer is not well.
No shit.
This guy is like a hopeless case. So his psychiatric care, it's been extended like time and time and time again because he is still so aggressive and so awful and just absolutely refusing to do anything that they've basically deemed him like untreatable at this point. This made me laugh. At one point they were treating him through like a tiny hatch in a door because they couldn't even get close to him. Like, that's how crazy this guy is. And he's paralyzed. Like, Jesus. He's like a wild animal.
There are feral children who are more well-behaved than this heathen.
And so it's been so long at this point that now they moved him to a special department, which is aimed at long-term stay, meaning that the likelihood of Hank ever being released, it's very slim. It's basically impossible. Like, he's never, ever going to get out of this treatment. This long-term stay, they basically just don't even treat him anymore. They just consider the case hopeless and they just keep him there. So that's at least some good news, I guess. Like, he will not be getting out and may he rot in there. So on one final note, I mentioned at the beginning of this case that this year, 1997, in Groningen, saw a slew of murders. And Anna's father, Jaap de Ruyter de Vilt, he like noticed that all these murders were happening and he was kind of pissed off and thinking that police were not paying enough attention to the murders. So he ended up founding the Groningen Safe Foundation, which I think is a nice, like, a small consolation knowing that the memory of Anna is going on and helping other people. But coming back to these seven murders, that is a little bit of foreshadowing for next week because they were actually committed by a pretty prolific serial killer.
Jack the Ripper.
No, you can't just say Jack the Ripper every time we say serial killer.
Watch me.
So yeah, we're going to talk about him next week. The Netherlands doesn't have so many like really prolific serial killers, but I think that this guy that we're going to talk about next can be classified as one of them. So until next week, that is
the Zodiac Killer.
Are you just listing serial killers now? You like look so proud of yourself. You like thought of a second one.
Gacy. John Wayne Gacy.
Proud of you. I'm not going to tell you this guy's name just yet.
Carla Homoka.
She is a serial killer. Good job. A Canadian one.
Look at me go.
And she's free right now.
I know names of Casey Anthony.
All right, we will see you next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this episode, please listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes of Spook Pod. New ones are out every Friday. Available now for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to talk to us? Have questions? You can email us at thespookpod@gmail.com or follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and Reddit at SpookPod.
For a full list of episodes, more deets, or to see what's coming next, visit our website, spookpod.com.
This has been a presentation of Mostly Awkward Media.
See you next week.